Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hi, everyone. We have a special announcement before we begin this week's episode. Have you ever wished that you could walk around a city and be given a private, intimate tour whispered into your ears in a sultry tone by a celebrity expert guide?
All the time.
Yeah. Well, that dream is now a reality if you're visiting London. Ooh. Because QI has teamed up with VoiceMap, a brilliant self-guided tour app, to bring you the first quite interesting tours, packed full of our trademark unusual facts.
And narrated by none other than Mr. QI himself, Sir Stephen Fry.
Whoa. Yeah. You simply download the app from the Apple Store or Google Play, select your tour, stick your headphones in, and get walking.
It's really easy to use. You can put your phone away because VoiceMap monitors your location as you're on the move, and it plays audio to you automatically as you arrive at each location. So it's great. You don't need to check your phone the whole time.
You can do it whenever you like, and like start whenever, stop, have a drink, halfway through.
Do it at 3 a.m. if you're interested.
Creepy.
We've got good street lights here in London, so you know, you'll be able to see everything. We've put two London tours together so far, one of Westminster and one of the City and Bankside.
That's right. So whether you're a first-time visitor to London or a lifetime local, you can take directions from Stephen and see the city from a whole new perspective. For example, did you know that
London is home to over 8.4 million trees, covering 21% of the city. This means that by the UN's standards, it can officially be classified as a forest.
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
I feel so healthy now.
Yeah. Or did you know that our most famous landmark, Big Ben,
keeps accurate time with the help of a handful of pre-decimal coins? A single penny balanced on the pendulum can speed the clock up by 2/5 of a second.
Who uses cash these days?
Yeah, only our clocks.
Well, yeah, only our clocks. That's where it all is.
You might discover how
London's classic red phone boxes were actually based on a tomb.
Oh, they do look quite like a tomb, actually.
So, what's not to love? To get started, just visit qi.com/voicemap.
If you're not going to be in London anytime soon, you can still get involved. You can listen to the tours virtually, just like a podcast or audiobook.
But before you crack into that, make sure you enjoy this week's episode of Lunchbox Envy. Hey.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, Roman gladiators rubbed them on their muscles before battle in the belief that they would give them strength.
A pair of them was found in the eye sockets of the mummified Egyptian pharaoh King Ramesses IV.
And the citizens of Bermuda celebrate New Year by making a huge one out of papier-mâché and dropping it off the roof of their town hall.
It's onions, everybody! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Rosie, I'm a chef and food writer, and I'm here with my QI elves, Jack and Manu. Hi, both of you.
Hi, Rosie.
Hey.
Shall we find out if we know our onions?
Yeah, I think we should. They're so ubiquitous. I think they're probably common to every culture. Do you?
Yeah, I think almost all cookery cuisine has onions in it. I literally can't think of a single one that doesn't.
No.
And I think part of that is just because of the sheer ease of growing them, right?
Of the 196 countries in the world, 175 of them produce and eat onions, which is twice as many countries as grow wheat, which is the biggest crop.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Imagine if we could do as much with onions as we could with wheat. We'd be solving a lot of like problems in the food chain, as it were.
They're super hardy. They can grow in tropical climates. They can grow in almost Arctic tundra. We think they came from Central Asia. Again, it's very hard to trace, partly because they're so old. And the earliest records of onion cookery come from the earliest cookbook that we have, which was done in Mesopotamia about 4,000 years ago. There's mention of onions in this cuneiform tablet.
It's always Mesopotamia.
Mm,
can I just say, Those guys really had the jump on most of us, I would say.
Well, they were the first ones to develop like writing that lasted. Like a lot of cultures didn't write anything down.
Yeah. People used to write on leaves and stuff.
Oh, that's true. So they didn't survive.
Yeah.
Whereas the Mesopotamians wrote on clay tablets.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when there were fires, they actually baked the clay and preserved it even better.
Mm. So cool.
Those who just told stories, they would remember the stories and then tell their children and their grandchildren, and they didn't need to keep anything written down. Like the earliest writing we have is a ledger sheet. It's like, it's accountancy. It's who owes who what and how much.
No. Mm. And they were talking about onions the whole time.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
You owe me 3 onions.
Okay, so we can agree that onions are basically sort of a really globally loved, globally used ingredient. Mm-hmm. I find myself cooking with onions pretty much every day. I actually was going to say real respect to the people with onion allergies out there. Like, that must be hard. I'm so sorry.
There's a religion called Jainism, and it's only really practiced in India. And they basically... they're like ultra vegans. They believe you can't eat plants if you have to kill the plant in order to eat it. Ooh. So they don't eat onions or garlic because you have to pull them up out of the ground.
Yeah.
So they can have fruit and they can like chop bits off herbs and stuff.
Mm. So could they take the top part of an onion or garlic? Because those bits are edible,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, the entirety of the onion plant is edible. And actually most of the species are edible to humans. Mm. Which is quite rare because we often only eat like a minority of the wild ones that are out there.
Yeah.
Alliums are actually a subsection of the lily family.
Oh.
Which you could probably tell from, I think the stems are quite similar when you've got like...
yeah, I guess so.
...lilies and they feel like onion stems. Well, maybe it's just me.
Why are onions just so woofy pungent? That's what I want to know.
And make us cry. Yeah. Mm. It's an insecticide. It puts off predators.
Not humans, though.
No, well, we're much bigger than most of the animals that eat onions. So,
and more stupid, I think.
Yes, I think
we
so.
Will eat anything.
We've also learned to cook. That's the way to destroy the pungency, is to cook them.
That's...
so they don't last very long because they biodegrade, but we know, for instance, that they were found in King Ramses IV's eyeballs after he died and
poor
he was
guy.
Mummified, because we found sort of traces of chemical. So not like whole, you know, slightly rotten onion segments, but like very tiny microscopic traces of onion, basically. And we theorized that the Egyptians thought that the pungency and the smell would be enough to sort of revive you. It's almost like smelling salts that would allow you to breathe in the underworld.
Oh, that's clever.
So maybe they were trying to bring him back.
I will say that an onion on the turn is about one of the worst things that will ruin my day. Like if I cut into an onion and I'm like, oh God, oh no,
it's going brown.
It smells so strongly different for the,
it does.
To start with. It's definitely sort of on the pooier end of things. Very sad. I have a very intense onion selection process, which is basically if you're shopping for onions, you want to look for really tight, shiny skin. Mm. The tighter the skin, the shinier the skin means that onion is perfectly ripe, ready to go.
Okay.
And it's not going to be sort of like drier. Mm. Their skin's got thicker. Mm. You're avoiding that. So you want to go for fleshy, shiny and tight. It's actually a good rule to live by, really.
This whole description has given me so much ick.
Look, I'm picky. I'm, you know, I'm a chef. I'm a wanker, so.
Yeah, well, that's a bit.
Right, let's get started with the first lunchbox, which is me.
Whoa.
I have brought an onion tart.
Oh.
Simon Hopkinson's onion tart, to be exact. I've absolutely smashed this, I've got to be honest. Like, that pastry is paper thin. It's from Simon Hopkinson's celebrated cookbook, Roast Chicken and Other Stories, with Lindsay Barham.
Ah.
This looks like a textbook, like a maths textbook.
I was going to say.
It is not a cookery book in the traditional sense. There are no pictures. It's just really good, simple, classical cooking. And it's your favorite chef's favorite cookbook, for sure.
Okay.
So this is like all of the most celebrated British chefs will know and love this book, including me. Listen, if you don't back yourself, what am I even doing here? He's got a little chapter on onions, and I've made this tart many times. It's just that good. And it's super simple. There are not that many ingredients in it. It's literally a classic short crust pastry with onions, double cream, egg yolks, salt and pepper.
Whoa.
All the good stuff.
So, Finny, there are four large brown onions in this. I cooked them down for over an hour. And they didn't even, they only really got a tiny bit golden as well. They're not like deeply caramelized in that sense, you know. But before we talk about it, let's eat some.
Yeah, let's dig in.
Thank you.
Do you guys want a fork?
No.
I was just going to crack on like this. That was a good top.
Oh, wow.
It is rich.
Whoa.
It's got such depth of flavor.
It's just so simple and so good, I think. It's very classic, probably more French than British, but it feels quite British, this, because it's so plain. And like, I'd be interested to know who eats more onions, the British or the French? Do we know?
Well, the numbers jump around a bit. I think it's been actually an incredibly tight competition the past few years. I always thought it was the French. For a bit, the British were ahead. I think now, as we're recording this, it is the French. But
damn it.
they have a good taste.
Fucking Brexit. No, I'm joking. And to be fair, we are excluding all the many other nations that also eat onions. There could be another one in the non-Western world that eats more than us.
Well, Tajikistan.
Mm-hmm. No.
Currently, they eat the most onions. In 2021, it was 60.4 kilograms per person per year.
Whoa.
Which is insane. Mad. About the weight of the average French woman. And then in France, they only ate about 10.6 kilograms.
Oh, right.
And in the UK, even less. So it was about 8.8 kilograms.
Way less.
Wow. Yeah. We need to work harder, guys.
Step it up.
We could do better.
We need to Miriam Margolyes that shit and just eat them raw out of our handbags.
What?
You've not seen her do that. She like has onions and spring onions in her bag and she's just like, delicious. Okay, so as we said, the onions took a long time to cook for this. Over an hour, very gently, in lots of butter. Mm-hmm. That's all I did. I salted them. Why would you salt your onions when you start cooking? Because salt draws out the moisture. One of the things you're trying to do is evaporate some of that water to soften them. And also that water is what prevents your onions from burning or caramelizing too quickly. Ah. So adding salt will create a bit more liquid in the pan, which means you're getting a slightly more even and easy cook on the onions.
Ah, see, I didn't know that.
I have a big bugbear with a lot of modern recipe writing, which is that no one is talking about how long you should be cooking your onions properly.
Oh, really? Mm.
There are so many recipes where it's like, cook the onions for 3 minutes. That's not going to cook them. That is literally not going to do the job, guys. I'm really sorry. You need to cook your onions for 8 to 10 minutes. If they're finely chopped or finely sliced, 8 to 10 is a minimum before they'll be even close to be being cooked or translucent, you know, whatever you're aiming for. If you're looking to caramelize, it's upwards of 20 minutes, I think. Ooh. Unless you're going really fast or you're adding stuff in, like some people add balsamic vinegar or sugar or, you know, honey, something like that. That's going to caramelize quicker than the onion, which is what gives you the caramelized effect.
We should make a playlist for like caramelizing onions and then find a song that's 20 minutes long. Or maybe three songs.
Or just
four
like
songs.
Grades of cookness.
Yeah, grades of cookness. Yeah.
The Onion Cooking Guide by Lunchbox Envy. No one in the world.
Find it on the website.
The other thing that came up in my head when I was making this start is cutting onions, slicing onions.
We must address that.
I'd love to know your own approaches before I tell you you're wrong.
I'm already offended, Rosie. We got it.
I would chop both ends and then chop it in half and then slice it. Sometimes I like to vary. Sometimes I'll do it 90 degrees, sometimes I do it the other.
I'm a root to stem for slicing.
Very good.
Oh, is that
she's got it right.
It?
So what I'm about to tell you is something that you learn in culinary school and it's not commonly known. And it's not something that even I stick to all the time, truthfully. Okay. If we imagine that the root and the stem are poles, north and south pole, imagine you're cutting from north to south pole, basically. So down towards the root rather than across the equator of the world.
So
in a half moon.
Chop in lines of longitude rather than lines of latitude.
Yes. Basically, when you slice onions lengthwise, i.e. root to stem, you basically follow the natural fiber structure of the onion, the natural makeup of the onion. And that helps them maintain their shape much better when you're cooking them. For example, in like long cooks, slow cooked braises, stews, caramelizing, those kinds of things, you'll be able to see the onion has retained its shape a lot better. And also, when you cut like that, you are rupturing fewer cell walls within the onion, which means you're actually going to have a milder, sweeter flavor than if you go the other way, where you rupture more cell walls and that releases loads of enzymes. And those are the strong enzymes that create that really pungent, sulfuric flavor.
Okay. Mm.
There is like method to the madness. Mm. Listen, it's not like you have to do it like this. I still often forget it's much easier to cut it the other way, to be honest, because when you cut the other way with the root holding the onion together, mm-hmm. it stays much easier on your boards. And I know all of you buggers at home are not sharpening your knives enough, so it's much safer to cut it that way as well. But yeah, it's a really interesting sort of thing that we actually mostly cut them wrong. Mm. There's also a really untechnical term, which I don't recommend Googling. I did it. Don't do it. Which I heard from a very, very famous Michelin star chef, which is that onions have a foreskin. Don't Google onion foreskin. Don't Google it, guys. What? It's not good.
Don't king
so
shame.
Let me show you.
Oh, no, Rosie.
Look, it's not an actual foreskin.
We're like, all adults, it's a fucking here. Onion. Adults.
Basically, when you peel an onion, mm-hmm. you obviously take these very dark, shiny layers off. Mm-hmm. And then you get to an outer layer, which you might have noticed is actually still not quite the same texture as the middle layers of onion. And that is what we would call a foreskin.
Onion foreskin.
Anyway, that bit won't cook as evenly. It has a little bit more rubbery, papery texture. You know, if you've ever grilled onions, those bits that go really wrinkly, that's because that was the outer bit of skin you've caught there.
It's a bit tougher.
So you actually want to go one layer deeper than you think you need to when you're peeling an onion and take off that foreskin.
I always thought that chefs were being super wasteful whenever I worked in kitchens. I started doing it as well because I was like, well, it's so much easier than trying to get like the really thin.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's actually because it's...
because it's halfway to being proper skin. Yeah. Like the onion is aging as it goes, and that's why it just doesn't cook as evenly. It's just not...
nice.
It's just not useful, unfortunately. Nice. You can use it in like stocks and, you know, don't waste it. Don't waste it, guys. Anyway...
thank you, foreskin.
So we should address the tears factor. I want to talk about crying. Why do we cry and how can we stop it?
Is it because we're cutting them wrong, as I said?
I mean, definitely, yeah, part of it.
Yeah.
So if you're rupturing those cell walls, you're going to create more of a chemical reaction in the onion that releases more of the tear chemical, which is called propionyl S oxide.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, propionyl S oxide. So I didn't know this. Onions don't contain that tear chemical in them. It's only when you destroy the cells that you like start the process of that chemical reaction that makes you cry. So that chemical is called a lacrimatory factor. It's basically something that irritates the lacrimal gland, aka the tear gland. So what it does is the chemical kind of evaporates really quickly in the air, and then it gets into your eye, and then it dissolves in the water on the surface of your eye, and it turns into sulfenic acid, which is why it hurts a flip ton.
Yeah,
it's really uncomfortable.
Like, I've tried a few methods in my time. Spoon in the mouth was the one that my mom always said to me. I'm not convinced.
It's absolutely
really that helpful.
Not.
The other one that have had the sort of middling success with is lemon on the board and on your knife before.
That's interesting.
I'm not sure what the science is behind it. I'm sure it's something to do with like maybe interrupting those.
The lemon's an acid. So
yeah. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Definitely cutting, as I described, pole to pole really does help. The other thing I would say is that if you are suffering during cutting onions, the one thing I have found that does help is sticking your face in the freezer. So basically just run over to the freezer and stick your face in.
Do you know what? That would actually help because it's slowing the chemical reaction.
Right.
So if you stick your onions in the fridge, which you should not do because it's going to like, we spoke about this with tomatoes, it stops the like nice, happy ripening process and it will kind of make them go funky and taste bad. So don't do it. But it would make the chemical reaction a lot slower when you're breaking those cell walls so you cry less. You'd have a shit onion, but it wouldn't make you cry.
Yeah.
Obviously, goggles if you're an extremist.
Mm-hmm. Many professional kitchens will potentially give a pair of goggles to a KP to chop up all the onions.
My mum sometimes uses, have you ever seen a full face snorkeling mask? It's the maddest thing. So she, if she's ever prepping a load of onions, you'll walk into the kitchen and she's breathing out the top of a snorkel.
Do you ever put like a slice of onion in the top of the snorkel?
No, because I love my mum, Jack.
Prank!
Right. This room is absolutely humming of onions, so we better move on and get through it. The next lunchbox today is Jack.
Yes. Now, I want you to picture a Frenchman.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you got one in your mind?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are you familiar with Didier Deschamps? No, it doesn't matter.
What I'm aiming at is the stereotypical French person who is wearing a Breton top, much like me today, and has a string of onions around his neck. Which is what I brought today.
Oh, very beautiful string of onions, babe.
Oh, I made them myself.
Where's your beret, though?
It looked very booby.
What are your boobs
you look
like
me when I run up the stairs.
So there is a reason we have this popular image in England of a Frenchman with the onions around his neck and a stripy top. So cast your mind back to 1828.
My favourite year.
Okay. This was an era when the region of France called Brittany, mm-hmm. which is kind of like, I would say it's the Wales of France. Mm. It's like slightly independent. It's got its own very different language, actually. Mm. And it's Celtic as well. So it was never conquered by the Romans, as we learn in Asterix and Obelix. Anyway, there's a particular part of Brittany, which is called Roscoff, and it's on the coast. And it's on a peninsula that points towards England. And it's famous for its onions.
Yes. So
apparently they're delicious. I'm sure you know all about this.
They are banging.
They're a lovely onion, the Roscoff.
And in the 1820s, a lot of the onion sellers were looking at the journey to Paris and thinking, it's quite a long way. And will anyone appreciate the deliciousness of my onions? And then they realised that there was a ferry that would take you to Plymouth. Mm. And the ferry still exists. It takes about 6 hours. And this is obviously before trains, before cars, so it was
before, you know, the best thing ever, the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah, it's true.
I love how the French looked to the West Country as like a culinary hub. They're like, oh, I know who's going to enjoy our incredible. Yeah. So not to dick on the West Country, but like.
No, definitely bloody not. You're from the West Country.
I'm outnumbered.
I know partly, but I'm like also me. Like, that's not where the first place I think in the UK is like.
But the thing, it was geographically linked. It's, if you look on a map, it's actually very close to Roscoff. And these young men, mostly called Jean, come over on the ferry and they often have bicycles in order to get around. They tell door to door, which is why people got to know them. And the striped shirts, they're particular to Brittany. And they would make such big profits with their delicious Roscoff onions because they were a bit of an exoticism for the, you know, people of the West Country. Kind of their first exposure to foreign people a lot of the time. And they called them Onion Johnnies.
Onion Johnnies.
And they continued. The peak was in the 1930s.
That's a whole century, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they would come and they'd stay for weeks at a time. So they would slowly work their way up to London. And in fact, the last Onion Johnny selling in London, he died in 2005.
Ooh.
Right.
And he had Winston Churchill amongst his customers.
Ooh, yeah. Wow.
He started in the 40s.
Damn. Sorry, just to pick up on something. Bit stereotypical, a bit racist to assume that they're all called Jean. Well, they can't all be called Jean.
No, that's true, I suppose.
To be fair, like, my dad is called Jean. But I think often it's because French names, they have like a Jean-Claude or like Jean-Manuel or Jean-Blanc.
Yeah.
So a lot of them probably were called Jean something.
That's a good point. Anyway, that's where the name Onion Johnnies comes from. And that's also where the British stereotype comes from. In 2022, the Johnnies Association had 7 members.
Oh my God, that breaks my heart.
And only 2 of them made the crossing that year. So
were they called Jean?
Well, the last one was called Jean Leroux, but the first one was called Henri Olivier. So they're not exclusively Jean. There's not a requirement to be called Jean before you can cross the channel.
And I have to assume that onion johnnies, the term, came before Johnny was then used to describe prophylactics, condoms, yes, if so. You will. Yeah.
When I told our producer I was bringing onion johnnies, he was like, really? Are you gonna demonstrate them?
Oh, God.
That's the flavour of condom no one needs.
It definitely must exist, though. Someone's made it. Right.
I do think it's fascinating that this image that we grew up, you know, like I remember, you probably were shown it in primary school, like word association, what's French? And then it was just a man with onions and a stripy shirt and a beret. It actually comes from something like...
What would the English outfit be? Like, what do we...
Morris dancing.
I was going to say a tracksuit.
Wow.
I think a suit and a bowler hat.
Yeah.
God, be boring.
Man going to the city with a newspaper under his arm and an umbrella in the other. It was actually quite hard. I made this onion garland myself. In order to make the garland, you have to tie the stalks up in a bit of string and sort of plait them together. But they sell them without much stalk these days.
Mm.
I mean, it's wasted weight. Nobody uses the stalk. But the three at the end, they're actually Roscoff onions. I managed to find some.
They are beautiful.
Mm.
They are beautiful. Very good onions.
So speaking of trading onions... have you heard of Vince Kozuga?
Should I have?
What's special about Vince Kozuga?
So Vince Kozuga was an American financier and trader in the 50s. And he realized that he could corner the market, the Illinois onion market.
Mm-hmm.
But what he did was he and his associates bought up 98% of Illinois' onions.
Right.
And then he threatened the buyers with high prices, otherwise he'd flood the market. So they ended up paying a premium for his onions. And then he went back on his word and flooded the market anyway.
Oh,
so then
Vince.
He was short selling, which is a bit complicated, but basically you can sell before you buy. So he made a huge profit off it. And onions were pretty much worthless. The canvas bags they were sold in were worth more than the onions themselves. And they ended up dumping like tons of them in the Chicago River because they were practically worthless.
Oh no.
So he ruined quite a lot of people's lives. Anyway, the upshot is the US Congress then passed the Onion Futures Act of 1956, which is still in place. So you actually can't legally trade onion futures in America to this day.
Oh, what a downer.
Fittingly, Chicago, the word, is thought to come from the indigenous Algonquin word Chicacua, which either means wild onion, which is the fitting part, or it means skunk, which seems like quite an important thing to distinguish.
Yes.
I mean, both are quite smelly, to be fair. Yeah, that's true. I like
that's
it.
True. It's funny because Chicago as a word, I think, is quite chic.
Yeah. It's got chic in the name.
I like it.
Oh, onions not chic?
Onions are very chic. Yeah. Of course, they're very chic.
So.
Did you know there's a French idiom? Obviously, we have the idiom in English, know your onions, which means to sort of be clever and know loads about something. In French, they have occupe-toi de tes oignons, which basically means mind your business.
Like, is that look after your own onions?
Yeah, like worry about your own fucking onions.
There's, it's very French.
Yeah, mêle-toi de tes oignons, like just leave me alone, mind your business.
Wow.
Love it.
Hmm, for a second, I thought it was going to be more existential, like you can never know your onions. what is the onion?
I'm sure there's a parable or idiom in there somewhere.
Well, the Shrek, the famous Shrek quote about how ogres are like onions.
Yes.
We have layers.
That was really
good. That was really good.
shall we move on to our final lunchbox?
Let's do it.
From My Sweet Manu.
Hey, thank you, Rosie. I have an onion cut in half.
Oh, I just got the smell.
It does. It smells really strong. Mm,
may I say, a very beautiful,
symmetrical
onion, that one.
It is, isn't it? I was thinking about how to present this, and I think I'm going to spare you the most active part of the lunchbox, which is grooming each other with the onion. So it's called self-anointing. It's basically rubbing each other with onions.
Okay. And where's this on OnlyFans?
Oh God, that's if you have enough money. So it's one of my favorite onion facts. If you ever want to break up a fight between capuchin monkeys.
Okay. Yeah, common problem.
Yeah, you know. You can throw onions at them and they will start all coming together and rubbing each other in onions.
What?
Why?
And that diffuses the tension.
Yeah, they love it. So they come together and they'll literally like grab the onion, rub it on their bits, and then they'll turn around and like rub it on someone else's back, like rub it all over their arms.
How did anyone discover this?
So it's something they do in the wild with different kinds of plants and bugs as well. They do it with millipedes.
Oh, I think I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So self-anointing, it's a kind of like grooming technique. So a lot of these plants and insects have anti-parasitic qualities, or like antimicrobial, okay, antibacterial qualities.
When you said they do it millipedes as well, I was like, so the millipedes are rubbing themselves with onions. That's going to be fucking hard. They're massive. And
all millipedes are really small. One by one.
Yeah. Now I understand.
Yeah, does that make more
the
sense?
The capuchin monkeys are rubbing themselves with millipedes.
The millipedes don't survive, I don't
think. I don't think they do too well.
No. Capuchin monkeys, where are they native to?
So you find them mainly in Central America and South America, in kind of tropical climates, so rainforests.
Mm.
So it's called social anointing. Coming together, rubbing yourself and stuff. And scientists weren't entirely sure whether it was purely medicinal or whether it was more to do with bonding. And then in 2015, a paper came out that suggests that it's both.
Oh, wow.
So basically what they did was they did an experiment where they cut one onion, or like very few onions, and threw them into the enclosure so that the monkeys, in order to take part, had to share onions and come together.
Okay.
And then in a second experiment, they threw loads of onions in so that each monkey had their own onion and they didn't have to rub each other with the onions. But they still came together.
It's a clever experiment.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So they think that it is social, but it's also kind of like, you know, when there's a kid at school that has lice.
Okay.
And you can't just treat the one kid because maybe it's given lice to all of the other kids as well. You just don't know yet. So it's best to do like a group treatment.
Right.
So it's like bonding, but also let's just smash it. Everyone gets onionated. We got to control
the
pets.
It's like evolutionary protection for the pack, basically.
Yeah. It's also because they are rubbing each other in areas that are hard to reach.
Yeah.
So it's this...
Familiar with that?
It's a really cool video. It's explained really well by Dr. Mark Bowler, who's part of the study. He was saying that they'll rub each other in like areas between the shoulder blades, which they can't reach, which is actually specific to monkeys because apes can. I had no idea that was a thing. So apes... Yeah, you can reach.
Both
if you're a capuchin monkey, you cannot reach that bit of your back.
I could if I wasn't 20 weeks pregnant.
Right, we will spare you the self-anointing. One thing that can happen, though,
okay,
after you've broken up the fight with the onion, is that once they're done doing that oniony rubbing thing, it can actually increase aggression between males. It's very confusing. And they think it might have something to do with the fact that onion smell is covering up the smell of the dominant male.
So you can't tell.
Yeah. So capuchins, males do this thing where they pee on their hands and their feet. And that's how they're like, smell me.
That's what Andrew Tate does, I heard.
So yeah, they pee on their hands and feet, and it signals to other less dominant males, like, look, smell who I am, don't mess with me.
Love
there's loads of onion juice on them. The subordinate males can't smell the pee, and they start being a little bit too cocky, and then fights break out.
Right.
Yeah.
God, it just reminds me, I can't believe I'm having to bring up a netball social again, but I went on a netball social at university, and my forfeit was that I had to eat a raw onion before I went to the club. And I was so annoyed about it because I was like, this is going to do the opposite of what I want it to do, which is drive all the men wild.
So humans do this as well.
Mm-hmm.
They use the properties of raw onions in their flesh.
In their flesh.
Which humans?
Well, specifically Viking warriors, apparently. When they received stab wounds to the abdomen, one of the ways of treating them would be to feed the victim onion-rich food, so raw onions, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wound would be smelled.
Oh.
If you could smell raw onion, that meant that your digestive tract had been pierced. And it's a bit grim. It's a bit grim. And therefore you were sort of doomed. There was nothing they could do.
That's such a shit way to figure it out. Because you're not helping the person. You're not like, oh, I can smell it here. Let's fix it. You're just like, oh, it smells bad, you're going to die.
Well, no, but if you can't smell it, then there's hope, right? And then you can use all the medicinal herbs that you've collected and saved. And
yeah, but you're also losing precious time there being like, hey, have an onion, wait half an hour, 45 minutes, then we'll find out if you're going to die or not.
It was the 10th century. I'm not sure how, you didn't have antibiotics, but it was, you know, would have saved a few, medicinal herbs. It's the best they had.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Quite clever, really.
There's a really cool paper written in the 50s called The Onion in Folk Belief.
Oh, that sounds great.
Oh, it's so good because it does grow in so many different places. Loads of different people eat it. Loads of different communities have like long histories and mythologies about onions.
Yeah.
In Egypt, they were like a really big symbol of kind of eternal life, and they were placed on sculptured monuments. Like the Pyramid of Cheops, apparently covered in onions.
Oh, really?
Mm. And
wait, onion carvings or actual onions?
I think carvings of onions, okay, ones that we still know.
Grow onions on the side of a pyramid.
Yeah, and then in Arab and Chinese communities back in the day, they thought that onions could prevent witchcraft.
Oh, yeah.
In the American South, people carried onions to protect themselves from conjurers and witchcraft as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, like voodoo?
Mm-hmm.
Or...
Yeah.
Wow.
I think witchcraft is a big fear across the world.
Yeah.
But I think one of my favorite ones is in the 1900s in the US, onions were used as love charms.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember reading that in medieval and Renaissance Europe, traditionally, you put an onion under the pillow of a young girl on the eve of St. Thomas's Day, which would cause her to have a dream of her future spouse.
Oh,
yeah, it's a kind of a love charm.
One for you single girls out there to try.
Yeah, give it a go.
The one I have here is also how to tell who your true love is. Take 4, 5, or 8 onions. Name the onions after your lovers. Put them near a chimney. And and then the first one that sprouts will be your true love.
Oh,
I know.
What would you name your onion?
Definitely Jean.
Definitely. Well, yeah. Jean.
let's ignore the fact that my dad is also called Jean. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a 10th century English riddle.
Okay.
I think you might know the answer. Given
I
it's
literally
onion episode.
Never know the answers to any of your 10th century riddles, Jack.
I am a wondrous creature, a joy to women, a help to neighbours, I harm none. Of the city dwellers, except for my killer, my base is steep and high. I stand in a bed, shaggy somewhere beneath. Sometimes ventures the very beautiful daughter of a churl, a maid proud in mind, so that she grabs hold of me, rubs me to redness, ravages my head, forces me into her fastness. Immediately she feels my meeting, the one who confines me, the curly locked woman. Wet will be that eye.
Oh my god, that is so rude.
I know, it's filthy.
Is it an onion?
It is an onion.
Oh, well done.
But I think the author was trying to imply it was something else.
You don't they say.
That is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
That's right. And feel free to send us your feedback, good and bad, via email, lunchbox@qi.com.
Rosie, have you got any oniony bonus recipes for us today?
Sure. In my cookbook, Good Time Cooking, I have a recipe for baked onions. It's just literally baked red onions served with freshly made ricotta and some herbs. Really, really good with some good bread. Good. Delish.
Nice. Amazing.
We will leave you with some fake headlines from our favourite satirical newspaper, The Onion. Jack, kick us off.
Okay, my favourite is anonymous hero donates 200 human kidneys to hospital.
And you, Manu?
World death rate holding steady at 100%.
My favourite is... Nations huggers announce plans for you to get over here.
Aww.
Oh, sweet.
We will see you next week. Thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Manu Orio, and me, Rosie McKean. It was mixed by Li Ying Li, and it was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.